House Committee on Budget Prioritization, Tuesday, December 11th, 2001, 8:30 a.m.
Bob Mancati, do you...
I will call to order the House Interim Special Committee on Budget Prioritization. And before we begin our agency presentations today, I have a couple of housekeeping announcements to make. If there are agencies present that have handouts to give to the committee, and you could give those handouts to Andrew before the presentation takes place, that would facilitate us getting the handouts to the members and kind of smooth the transition between the presentations. The members are cautioned that in between presenters, the mics are live, and so to govern your conversations accordingly. On the per diem sheets, would the members please check, and if you are not driving back to your district each evening, could you cross out the mileage so that we don't incorrectly reimburse you for mileage? Also, you have at your place an orange-colored sheet. We have now got the ability to have Cafe Today make us lunches. If you'd like to avail yourself of this, fill in your form. They will be in here around 9:30 to pick them up, so we need to have them ready to go by then. Also, members will find at their places a response from the Department of Education to the questions that the committee asked them to provide extra information on. So this is for the purpose of the committee members having the information that they requested. Once more, I would just kind of like to recap some of the initial comments that I made yesterday, that the purpose of this committee is to collect information, and the body of information that is amassed during our week of hearings will be made available to all the members of the process to use in our deliberations as we rebalance the budget. Once again, I would like to encourage people that can't be here to submit written testimony. The written testimony that the committee receives will be made available to the committee members, and it will be made part of the permanent record and part of the information that's presented. I would ask people to be respectful of the process, to recognize that we're under very tight time constraints. We have a lot of budget areas, a lot of information to cover in a short period of time. And I would also ask people to be respectful of the emotional nature of some of the issues that we're going to be discussing. I would just like to remind people that we're here to seek solutions to the budget problems that we face and to offer their testimony and their comments in that spirit. And with that, I would begin today with Human Services testimony, and I'd like to ask Bobby Mink and Doug Wilson to come forward to make the presentation on behalf of the Department of Human Services. Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for coming today.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Bob Mink. I'm the Director of the Department of Human Services, and with me is Doug Wilson. He's our Budget Director, and Doug will be making the bulk of the presentation today about the proposed reductions that you'll be looking at. And I wanted to make a couple of preliminary comments, however, contextual comments, but Doug will be making a few as well. I wish I was before you for another reason, but here we are, and this is a job that we all have to do, and I really empathize with you because your job's the hardest one. We're going to propose things to you to consider, but ultimately you have to make the choices. I just want to let you know that whatever you decide, we will in good faith manage. We'll do the best thing we can to manage it with the least impact to people. But when you're looking at reductions of this magnitude, people will be impacted. And remember, just a few months ago, we ended the session, and during the session, as we we're talking about reorganization and a lot of other things, about improving the administration of our department, I told you that this department every year serves over 900,000 Oregonians. And these are our most vulnerable citizens. And so as we get into talking about this, we're talking about limiting services to some of those individuals. And it's very, very difficult for us to do that. We're in this business to help people. And so when we come before you at a time like this, it's not easy. And we spent a lot of sleepless nights trying to figure this out. The other thing to remind you of from last session is that we ended up with a very tight budget, and that was by design, both from the governor's office and from you. Remember, we call this a no-flex budget, the no-flex budget. And what that meant was is that we made assumptions about the budget were very tight. We didn't build in a lot of wiggle room into these budget numbers. And so we're entering this phase right now with the economic downturn where some of our budget items are out of balance. We're over budget in the health plan right now. We're over budget in food stamps and some other things. So we come before you at this time when we're seeing more need than what we've seen in good economic times. People are looking for services, so that's another thing to remember. The last thing I'll say to you before Doug gets into this, when you look at our budget, and he's going to go through an overview of how we spend our general fund, there are four big programs. And all of our programs are important, but the biggest chunks of our program are the health plan, long-term care, county mental health services, and I'm blanking on the fourth one.
On EDD.
And the DD services, and so those are some of the most vulnerable people we serve, people in the health plan and people with exasperating mental illness or developmental disabilities, and also our frail seniors. But we cannot get to these numbers of reduction without impacting those programs because they make up so much of our budget. So just a forewarning about that. And now I'm going to turn it over to Doug to give you some more specific overview information, and we'll get right into the reductions.
If I might just interject for a moment, just a process point for the committee members. This is going to be a rather lengthy discussion that's going to go across a number of program areas. The department has asked that we ask questions to them as they present. So don't feel that you have to wait till the end of the presentation to ask a question.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think at your desk you should have a handout with a cover like this. This is the material we'll be going through. You have a notebook, I think, from LFO that has very similar information, but the print is smaller, and we'll try to work off this one here. Many of you know our budget, know our programs. Some of you are probably a little less knowledgeable than others. Some, like Representative Winters, have spent a great deal of time on our programs, and we appreciate that. But on the first page, there's a graph that just shows where our funding comes through. Total funds were an $8.5 billion program. Of that, 30% is general fund, 12% are other funds, and federal funds make up almost 60% of our budget. The important thing to remember about our budget is the link. One of the important things is the link to federal funds. If you take a look at that 30% of general fund, which is just over $2.5 billion, you're looking at about 70% of it is used to match Medicaid dollars. And we use Medicaid in almost every part of our department. It funds the Oregon Health Plan. It funds the long-term care program, the community development disabled or DD program, county mental health, our local community mental health, and a number of other areas in our budget. So that program alone, that federal-state partnership program, represents between 65 and 70% of our budget. There's something called temporary assistance, which represents about 4.7% of our general fund. We use that to match or maintain the maintenance of effort for temporary assistance to needy families. That's the TANF program. There's a maintenance of effort, which I'll talk about in a minute. There are a number of other programs who represent about 7.3 of the general fund is to match those federal programs, which leaves only or less than 20% of our general fund are used in some other way not matching general or federal funds. And of that 18.4%, a lot of that is tied up in what I'll call, you know, sort of pseudo-mandatory programs, much in part driven by the court system in terms of the forensic wards at the state hospital. Some of that money goes to our Child Protective Service, where the courts play a large role in telling what kids need to be served in what setting and those types of things. So really, our general fund, there's not a great deal of flexibility outside the federal arena in our general fund. The same can be said for the other funds, 12%. The biggest share of that 12% are tobacco-related funds. There's approximately $130 million between the health division and the health plan in tobacco settlement dollars, and another about $215 million between health division and the Oregon health plan of tobacco tax funding. That makes up the largest share of those other funds, those two funding sources. And finally, in the federal program funds there, you can see that Medicaid makes up, again, about two-thirds of the federal funds, and then the other parts of that. I need to notice that food stamps, a growing part of our budget. The good thing about food stamps is the federal the benefit food stamp is almost entirely, if not all, federal funds, but the staffing that goes along with that, it's a 50-50 match, 50% state and 50% federal. The same applies to women, infants, and children, which is a nutritional program or the WIC program. That benefit is entirely federal also. So that gives you an idea of how we get our revenue and what our general fund is spent for. Generally, the next page shows you sort of how we spend that money in very broad senses. Almost 80% of our budget is paid out to clients or for purchase services through local providers, hospitals, nursing homes, in-home care, group homes, whatever it might be, A&D providers, or two counties, and then most of that money counties use to purchase services for clients that we jointly administer for. Another 13 points, or about 5.8%, this is general fund, are used in the institutions, most of that in town here at the Oregon State Hospital, but also over in Pendleton and Eastern Oregon Psychiatric Center, as well as the training center over there. Another 13.6 is used as what we'll call our direct services. These are services, mainly case management, child protective service, of those staff that deal directly with clients. This is the core of our staff, the bulk of our staff that deal with clients directly. And finally, what we'll call administration is a little over 3% of the general fund, and that's, you know, besides Bobby and I here at the table, it's all the financial folks, all the information systems folks, all the policy folks that deal with the federal government, and various administrative structures within the department. So that gives you an idea of how we spend our money. Give you a little context.
One of the, Madam Chair, if I can just interject here, one of the things I'd like to add to what Doug said is that when you look at this 78%, 78% that is paid out, and then the others for staff salaries, in the smaller communities in our state, that's a tremendous economic impact. And so as we do our business, not only are we serving Oregonians, but we're training the economy as well. So there's that consideration.
The next pie chart there is just to give you an idea of where the money goes in terms of the programs, from sort of largest down to the miscellaneous or other category. The Oregon Health Plan is almost a third of our budget, and actually exceeds a third of our budget if you take into account the tobacco tax and tobacco settlement funds that are part of the health plan. There's about $320 million there of those two funding sources over and above the general fund that's represented on this pie chart. The next largest program for about 20% is the long-term care for seniors and the disabled, including OPI, but most of that is the Medicaid long-term care for low-income seniors and disabled. Bobby mentioned the two next largest, also the community DD system and the community mental health system. Both represent over 10% of the budget. Now, that's about two-thirds of the budget among those four major programs, and you can go down the line there to give you an idea of where our dollars are spent and the kind of clients that they serve. We have lots of dollars, $2.5 billion of general fund, but much of it's centered in four or five major programs in the department, serving a wide variety of clients. The next page.
Excuse me, Representative Butler has.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Doug, I don't think I have a real clear idea at this point, going back to one of the earlier pages here, of those programs which have little or no, and I would start with no, federal funds or other funds in them that are strictly general fund programs. I noticed that of the total amounts of money, of the total of $8.5 billion that are expended here, that non-matched general funds amount to $18.4 What programs specifically are those that have no federal program monies in them at all?
I'll give you examples. I'm not sure if I can list them all, but Oregon Project Independence is entirely general fund. The forensics wards at the state hospital are almost entirely general fund. There is some other funds in there. Some of the child protective service functions are general fund, but in those areas we try to match as much federal funds as we can. But the sorry fact is that all income groups and neglect of kids, and federal funds are usually geared toward low income folks. Some of the health division programs around some of the areas have general fund only. There aren't that many areas in our budget which are general fund only in terms of specific programs. We try to match as much as we can and across them. I can get you a list, a greater list, if you'd wish.
Madam Chair, I would like to have a copy of that list provided to the committee, if I may ask for it, so that we'll have a pretty good idea of basically program by program, beginning with OPI and the forensics ward and child protective and health division and so forth. So we'll know exactly those programs that have the bulk of the general fund being utilized in them, or those programs which have no outside match, again, in keeping with the comment that I made yesterday relative to some of the programs that are used through the community college and community college and development services that we have. My concern is that if you go in and say, fine, this looks like an area that we could make 10 cents worth of cuts in, but that 10 cents may cost us a dollar in revenues, which are utilized for some of these most vulnerable of our citizens. I don't want to take a look at those first. I want to take a look at those very last. So if we may.
If you could provide that information to the committee with the program, a brief description of what the program does, the dollar amount, and then the percentage of the general fund only programs that amount of money attributes to, I think that would give us the basis that we need.
We'll work on that.
Madam Chair.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you. Gentlemen, while we've interrupted the flow of your presentation, I'm just going to ask for one more thing as you're going to generate a new document. Can you break down for us, without a huge amount of effort, where the caseload increases are heading in terms of, and I know that there's been a drastic increase in, for instance, children below the poverty level, and I'm sure adults below the poverty level too, but if you could give us an idea of program by program of the caseloads and where they're trending and where you expect them to go, that would be really helpful too.
Madam Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, if you turn the page, I think I'll try to do that a little bit. Maybe not the detail you need, but we'll give you an idea. But let me make sure you all understand of what we do on a regular basis. We do something called rebalance, which I guess this committee has been named, but we've been doing it for years. About every 6 months during the biennium, and during that period of time, we reshoot or reforecast our caseloads. And we did that for a potential November rebalance, and then decided, along with the governor and I think the legislature also decided, that it wasn't the best time to do rebalance going into a special session. At that, we gave a report to Representative Winter's subcommittee. We basically had the net of the problems, mainly driven by caseload increases, and the savings throughout the department. We had about a $27 million problem over and above the legislative adopted budget at that time. I expect that to grow because of the caseload growth that I'll talk about here in a minute. But that's another thing you need to sort of put in the back of your mind, that you don't only have the $720 million issue. You're going to have a few other issues, including ours around caseloads and things that we're going to have to deal with. I better also mention something called HIPAA. Her Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, or HIPAA, which is another issue that hits us and other state agencies, which was not part of the budget, which should probably be something else you need to think about in the upcoming months. But going back to I'm going to move on. The first caseload I want to talk about is food stamps real quickly. Keep in mind the benefit on the food stamp is all federal funds, but the staffing that we use for eligibility is a 50-50 match between federal and state funding. you can see that we've had significant growth, and in fact, over the past year, roughly, the growth has almost the caseloads for us have almost increased by a third over the past year, and they continue to grow at an accelerating amount. You can tell that the bold line there, or the darkest line, is the actuals through, I believe, November of this year. And you can just see some, you know, increasing growth in that program. I think we added between 5,500 and 6,000 cases, food stamp cases, last month alone during November. So that's a very fast-paced growing program. You can tell, taking a look at the LAB budget, even though we don't necessarily budget state funds for, the benefit is the dotted line, and you can tell where we are tracking way above that LAB line as of today, and the rate of growth is accelerating right now. Much of that is due to the economy. Some of it is also due to outreach that have been around for the last 12 to 18 months, both by ourselves and by many community groups, and trying to get the food stamp benefit out to as many people as possible, which is the good thing. It brings in lots of federal funds. It's about a $500 million program for us. So that way it brings in a lot of dollars to the state. The unfortunate thing is we have not been able to keep pace in the staffing for this program. And it also, that alone slides over to the next page, which is the TANF basic. This is the temporary assistance to needy family. It's the basic sort of cash assistance grant program that we administer. And that caseload is also increasing after a dramatic drop over the past 5 or 6 years. That is starting to increase again, and that bold line again that juts up there toward the end are the actuals, and you can see over the past few months they have started to creep up, actually more than creep. They're going quite a bit over the legislative adopted level, which is the smaller of the lines there, and we expect that to increase for two basic reasons. Again, the economy, as folks lose their jobs, they have to have kids to be on this program, and generally they're single parents. But also, to keep up with that fast accelerating growth in the food stamp program, the same staff that does TANF case management eligibility, so we're having to take some of that staff off and work on food stamp eligibility to keep up. So those, the staff that does self-sufficiency and keep the TANF clients on task, keep them moving towards self-sufficiency and employment, we're having to use that resource to do food stamp eligibility also. So we're having to do sort of two jobs at once to keep up. So staffing is important, impact both in being understaffed as well as affecting other programs.
Madam Chair, just let me say that these budgets are so interrelated. When people come in for food stamps during an economic downturn, they can't come in for food stamps and then find out they're also eligible for the health plan, also eligible for TANF or some other relief. And so that drives up the caseloads. And then because we did not add staff this last session for the food stamp eligibility folks, so many people are churning through on food stamps, and we're pulling staff off of TANF and other things that are designed to get people into jobs so we can do the food stamp eligibility, that we're losing the focus on TANF right now. Now, I believe that even without that, if we had had more staff for food stamps, the TANF might be increasing anyway because of the economic downturn. It just makes sense. The other thing that's happening is that as people become laid off, they're competing for those entry-level jobs that our welfare clients were going for. So there's more competition for the jobs. It's more difficult to place folks. So it all comes together. It's interrelated. It's a very complex maze.
The next chart is what's happening.
Representative Minter.
Doug, are you seeing a parallel increase in not only TANF, but the health plan that you actually can track, as we do more eligibility for food stamps as the economic impact, and that there really is that parallel between all three?
Yes, usually, Madam Chair, Representative Winters, you're anticipating my next comments, so you're ahead of me as usual. But the next chart is the health plan, and you can see that these are the November rebalance forecasts. We're reforecasting these numbers as we talk, and I'll talk about that in a second. But the darker squares there are the legislative adopted budget levels. The little triangles are the the forecasted amount for late fall and throughout the biennium, and there is a significant increase there. It's about 19,000 cases, which represents about $30 million general fund over the biennium that we're over budget there. Now, there's offsetting things in the health plan to lower that $30 million, but caseload alone, that's $30 million problem. Representative Winters talked about this tie between the programs. We did some work about 6 months ago or so and took a look at 3 months' worth of new food stamp clients and new health plan clients during some very high outreach periods of high outreach efforts by us in the community. We found a 70% correlation between the new clients, meaning that as clients, like Bobby said, come on to food stamps, they're also coming on to those other programs that have a lot more state funding on them. And these are entitlement programs the way they're structured now. And we can't really shut the door and say you only get food stamps, mostly when doing outreach for food stamps also. Need to make a mention on caseloads. Like I said, we're redoing our forecast right now. I saw some of the early numbers last week, and they are significantly up even over this November line that you see here. And we'll bring that information to you as soon as we have it, which will still be a few more weeks as we finish the forecasting and then take that and put it into the budget structures in the department. But that you'll have that prior to too many deliberations on the before the special session. So that's the health plan, significant caseload increases there because probably a food stamp outreach and food stamp growth, as well as the economy, and it hits those groups of adult couples, families, and the poverty level medical populations, those which would be, which you would expect to be impacted by the economy. The next graph is the other large program, the second large program.
Excuse me, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Doug, and looking at this, if I go back to this, and I appreciate the fact that you're talking about both the economy and outreach through the food stamp program. Looking at the food stamp chart, if I just look at July 99 versus where you're at today, looks like you were serving about 110,000. Now you're up to 170,000. That'd be a 60,000 growth on 110,000, over 50% increase. If I looked at July of 00, I'd be at 120,000 to 170,000. That's fully a 40% increase just within a year. What is the economy certainly has gone sour, but certainly you must be doing the dickens of a job of an outreach too. Where are the resources, the additional resources? You mentioned that you're pulling people away from a TANF program, which I understand. Now these are if I understood your comments earlier, and we'll get that information, I guess, but food stamp and TANF are largely or almost wholly funded by federal dollars. When you move folks around between food stamp and TANF, are we losing any research? Are we using more general fund resources as we do that, or is it still wholly federal dollars?
The food stamp benefit, Madam Chair, Representative Butler, is 100% federal, and the staffing is 50-50. In the TANF program, I might as well talk about maintenance of effort here because it's a good time to do it. The TANF program is what I'll call a modified block grant program from the federal government. We get $168 million per year from the federal government each federal fiscal year. But to receive that block grant, that $168 million per year, we have to provide what is called a maintenance of effort, which is state funding at least 75% of what we spent in this program in 1994. And right now we're right near that level of maintenance of effort. And so we're not putting necessarily any more general fund. What we're doing is taking that TANF staff in some part and using them to help with food stamp eligibility efforts. In the past, that group has pretty much been the same. It's our old AFS staff. And in some cases, it's the senior system, the SDSD system between our staff and the AAAs. And we're not processing as fast on food stamps as we could because we don't have the staff resources right now. We're trying to keep up with that. The other issue that we have to keep in the back of our minds around food stamps, the federal government has some very strict standards around error rates. And if you're asking staff to move as quick as they can to get people on the program, we could suffer error rate. Program is what I'll call a modified block grant program from the federal government. We get $168 million per year from the federal government, each federal fiscal year. But to receive that block grant, that $168 million per year, we have to provide what is called a maintenance of effort, which is state funding at least 75% of what we spent in this program in 1994. And right now, we're right near that level of maintenance of effort. And so there isn't, we're not putting necessarily any more general fund. What we're doing is taking that TANF staff in some part and using them to help with food stamp eligibility efforts. In the past, that group has pretty much been the same. It's our old AFS staff. And in some cases, it's the senior system, the SDSD system between our staff and the AAAs. And we're not processing as fast on food stamps as we could, because we don't have the staff resources right now. We're trying to keep up with that. The other issue that we have to keep in the back of our minds around food stamps, the federal government has some very strict standards around error rates. And if you're asking staff to move as quick as they can to get people on the program, we could suffer error rates. We have in the past. We've done some stuff in the recent past to get away from having an error rate. But we very well could have an error rate the next time you come back and take a look at us.
Madam Chair, just a footnote comment. I assume that as we talk about processing numbers and so forth, that eventually we'll get to an IT portion of this this and other presentations. And I would like Doug and Bobby, as they make their presentation, if they need to drop over to that side, so we'll know that we are meeting our goals there, so that we can avoid that error rate if at all possible. Thank you.
Representative Shepard.
Thank you. Just a question for my clarification. Maintenance of effort, the threshold is 75% of what the state was spending in 1994.
Right.
Adjusted for inflation?
No.
And at that rate, we are still just meeting maintenance of effort?
We have, Madam Chair, Representative Shetterly, used at various times since 1994 that those fundings in other parts of our budget or state government. I mean, we've taken quite a bit of general fund out of the old AF, what I'll call the old AFS budget, and put it elsewhere in our department or with the legislative playing a role in that area. Now, other states, we have used all our TANF almost. We carry some forward and we identify some. Some states have very large unused TANF amounts. We have very little, if any, that we have not allocated for use in our budget. And so that will play into something I'll talk about in a second about what's happening at the federal level around TANF. But we face some real risks about how we've spent our TANF dollars and sort of where we're just on the line for maintenance of effort. And we could be penalized if we can't meet that maintenance of effort.
Go ahead,
Representative. Thank you, Madam Chair. Doug, I think this is probably my chance once and for all to understand maintenance of effort. So could you just delineate the things that count toward maintenance of effort are all state funds that support these federally funded programs, so personnel, things like tax credits, the Working Family Child Care Credit, that counts toward it? Are there other kinds of things?
Madam Chair, Representative Rosenbaum. There are numbers of things, and we've tried to explore all the alternatives that continue to do that. It is the general fund we have in our budget. It includes some, we're using some of the FIPA, the family insurance, whatever FIPA stands for, I can't remember. Some of that money, some monies in the Department of Education. We have said this is maintenance of effort, is definition. Refundable tax credits are eligible, not non-refundable, but refundable tax credits are eligible as maintenance effort.
So
there's
new
lots
working
of other
family child care credit, which hasn't taken an effect yet. Well,
and when the important thing to remember on maintenance of effort, as you make these reductions, you know, when we have to sit down and actually make the reductions, we'll need to make sure across all of state government that we'll work closely with DAS and LFO and the other agencies to take a look at what's happening, because the penalties on maintenance of effort are not pleasant. You don't lose federal funds. You lose the federal funds, then they expect you to make it up, and on top of that, there's a penalty. And if you don't make it up in the first year, it starts to grow. The penalty starts to grow. So it's something we don't want to move too far away from in terms of not meeting a maintenance of effort. And the maintenance, there's a maintenance of effort for daycare programs also, and they're late. And you have to make sure that when you do those calculations, that you're looking at both daycare and TANF.
Representative Winters.
Just a comment on maintenance of effort, as we have done creative financing, is what I call it. You're going to look at more than just the DHS agency, to look at the maintenance of effort and those programs that have used to match for the federal match, and it is far throughout the system, which means that they're interconnected and not disconnected, and so just keep that in mind as you're getting your budgetary information. It's huge. Oregon has done a tremendous job, I think, in making sure that we utilize all of our dollars creatively, and so now we're at the point of where we're maxing out, and which poses some different difficult decisions for us.
Mm-hmm. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You said that the maintenance of effort baseline is 1994, and your charts, some of them go back to 1994, a couple of them only go back to 1995. It looks to me as if, with the exception of TANF, our caseload was lower in 1994 in the other programs. Can you tell me what the effect of the per capita erosion then of general fund support has been since 1994?
Madam Chair, Representative Nolan, I think I understand your question. Keep in mind the maintenance of effort only applies to the TANF program, as we're speaking.
Okay.
The Medicaid program is a pure matching program,
mm-hmm.
and it's at approximately 60% federal funds and 40% state funds. And so for Medicaid, which is about two-thirds of the budget, those are for, like, the health plan. You know, as long as we put a dollar up, we get, you know, of each program dollar, we pay 40, they pay 60%. And as long as we put up our share, we can get their share as long as it's an eligible use. There's other, you know, other limitations, but they get real complex. And so it's only the TANF program. And it's not necessarily the maintenance of effort that drove the caseload down. It was the redesign of what we were doing in Oregon even prior to the federal welfare reform that happened in 96, right? Yeah. Summer of 96 is when they passed welfare reform, where they did change that program and create the TANF program and put in the maintenance of effort. Prior to that, that program, formerly known as the Aid to Dependent Children, ADC program, was a matching program just like the Medicaid program was. I don't know if that helps you at all or not.
It does help me. Thank you, Mayor. One quick follow-up, if I might, Madam Chair. I want to make sure I heard that I'm interpreting correctly what you said about managing the caseload in order to meet the maintenance of effort. Am I correct in interpreting that to mean that we, as a matter of policy, deliberately reduced the number of eligibles or the threshold for eligibility in order to keep the numbers low?
No. Madam Chair, Representative Nolan, I don't think, if I said that, I didn't mean it. I mean, the program has changed significantly since the early 90s, where we have focused much more on self-sufficiency and geared ourselves to making sure that the clients have the supports they need so they can move toward employment. And in that interim, they have a basic cash grant if they need it, but they're working towards self-sufficiency and employment. I don't think the maintenance of effort has played into, you know, in terms of trying to lower the caseload or anything. It's just a funding mechanism. I will say, though, because it's not a matching program in the traditional sense anymore, the caseload growth that we have, we will have, if we fund it, we'll have to fund it, almost all of it, with general funds. And that does create an issue, because the LAB is basically at the level of funding we have available from the federal government through that modified block grant. And if that caseload grows, which it's starting to, we're going to have to address it with general fund dollars if we continue to fund the growth. I'm going to keep moving on because we have about 80 items of budget cuts to go through, and I want to finish this part real quick. The good news on the long-term care is, at November at least, and it probably continues on to the new forecast that we're developing now, the long-term care system is tracking very close to the budget as we stand right now. But that's less susceptible to economic changes than some of our other programs. Real briefly, the next page is called Federal Impacts and Department of Human Services. I just want to draw your attention to number four. There are things happening at the federal level which are could show some benefit to us. Some of the discussions going around are increasing that Medicaid match rate by a couple percentage points, depending if you take a look at the Senate or the House version at the federal level. The Senate version could bring in roughly $100 million in a one-shot, one-year happening. The House version, $150 million, based on the percentages. I didn't think this would make it too far, but it is part of the economic stimulus discussions at the federal level. The bad thing, if there is something about this is for one federal fiscal year. It's a one-timer. And, you know, you've probably been briefed on the problem with one-time revenue sources and trying to deal with the future. The next item, I'm going to turn over to Bobby to talk a little bit about working prisons.
Well, I just wanted to, Madam Chair, tell you a little bit about the priorities I asked Doug and the staff to go through as they did this. And this is, there's all kinds of different ways to look at reductions, and everybody sitting here would have a different priority maybe. But what I asked Doug and staff to do is, first of all, look at new revenue sources, try to find new sources of revenue within the federal government or other funds to help us. I asked them to review the special appropriations set aside in the e-board for other purposes, such as the reserves for the health plan and AFS and the senior drug program, just to remind you of those. Then the third thing I asked them to do was to go back to the governor's policy, recognize what the governor's policy was during the legislative session, and that to center our reductions around what the governor's policy was, so that if there were add-backs during the legislative session, we're going to show those to you right up front. So we tried to center on the governor's policy during the session. And the fourth thing is a discussion of a vulnerability. Well, everybody we serve is vulnerable. And depending on who you know in the system and how you're connected with the system, some people are going to seem more vulnerable to you than they may with me. So we did our best shot at taking a look at vulnerability of our clients. And some of the things we considered were to maintain a safety net for the most vulnerable and at-risk clients across the state. And in order to have the safety net, the second bullet point is you got to have a viable network of service providers. And so we took a look at that. Then we had to recognize the viability of the various providers, including the state, the local government, and the home and residential provider network that we have. And then part of what we do is prevention. And some of the prevention programs we have are just critical to what we do, and they permeate everything we do. And I think the best example of that is alcohol and drug abuse. And if we don't do anything about alcohol and drug abuse at the levels we're doing it now, that's going to impact our caseload somehow. So we took that into account. And then we wanted to avoid thinning the soup any further. And if you ask me for a good definition of that, I can't give you one. But one of the things that we didn't want to do was continue to deteriorate levels of service, so we're not going to get outcomes. So one of the things we looked at is eliminating large chunks of program rather than making them thinner. Now, as you're going through this, you're going to see how one or more of these apply in a case and how one or more don't apply. This is not a perfect world that we're dealing in, and so while these were overall principles, they're not equally applied in every case, and there's no way that an individual can do that. So that's just the caveat as you're listening to this. I know you'll have your own ideas about that, and you're going to set your own principles, but here are the principles that we use. And so Doug now is going to go through 64 pages of budget reductions for you. And And I must say that I don't like any of them, but, and I know you don't either, but it's a task we have to do.
Madam Chair, like, we have about 80, roughly 80 items here. I'll move as quickly as I can, but I also want to make sure we can address any questions you have. And we'll try to respond as timely as we can in written form, which may be a better way of doing it, and some of the more detailed questions. What you have in front of you is the document that's also on our webpage for those that don't have copies of it. I need to tell you that we are now working closely with both your staff at LFO and the governor's budget staff in taking a look at these numbers. I think we probably spent all between 6 and 8 hours with in meetings last week with them going through the numbers. We're changing some of the numbers based on some of those discussions around the assumptions. Our programs, as you saw, are based in large part on assumptions because we have to make assumptions about caseloads. We're budgeting quite a ways out. And when we do that, these numbers will change. They'll change in our discussions with LFO some and BAM. They'll also change in many of these items as our caseloads change, as we update the forecast. So the numbers you see here will change most likely before we get to special session for many of these things. Let's see, and I think that's probably enough. Let's keep in mind that we represent roughly 22% of the general fund budget for the state, and so our target, our 10% target for program was just under $250 million. And if you add all these up, you come up with about, I think it's $245 million worth of program cuts, and at the end we have our admin cuts. Starting right off there on page one, we have one lottery-funded program, and we just stuck this in here. It is a separate calculation. We have a dedicated lottery program for gambling addiction, which is run through our health services cluster, and this first cut would cut into what we plan to do in terms of developing some residential programs that would take the funding that's been allocated for that away. The programs aren't up and running yet. These are a pretty new program. So what we're doing is reducing what we would plan to do in the future with that reduction. Again, let me, one other note is I'll talk about these in these 2% increments as we were required to present. These aren't in priority order within each 2%. So where you see on the left-hand column where it says first 2%, that's the first 2% increment. They're not in priority within that category. There's a number of items in here where we're trying to maximize the use of revenue. As we cross over biennials, we carry funds forward, and we try to maximize that as much as possible. These would have been things we would have brought forward in our rebalance if we had rebalanced in November. The first one is we have excess TANF funds from last biennium, and we're saying let's use those this current biennium to solve some of the problems that we have and to address these cuts. There's about $500,000 there. The next item is we have a $4.3 million emergency board special appropriation for caseload reserves and TANF. What we're suggesting there is to use the TANF we can carry forward that we did not use last biennium and sort of do a swap, freeing up general fund for you, but maintaining that reserve as a TANF funding or a federal funding reserve. And we may have to use that because our TANF caseloads are going up also. So that doesn't necessarily affect service levels any, but it does free up $4.3 million of general fund for you. The next item is related to the Jobs Plus program. Part of the original development of the Jobs Plus program required employers to put $1 per hour worked for each jobs client aside in an education account. That account has been growing. And there's about, after 5 years, if the money is unspent, it's sitting there. The client doesn't necessarily use it at that point in time. Clients haven't used this money as much as we thought they would originally use. And we're saying, let's use that money to address problems. What you must remember, for those unspent dollars after 5 years, which this 2.5 represents, would have gone to the scholarship committee or commission. So keep that in mind. I'm not sure if that's figured into the budget or not. It's something that I need to check. But that's an impact here. I'm not sure if they're called the scholarship commission either anymore. I can't remember what it had been renamed.
Different.
Page three, in this first 2%, we're proposing to eliminate the Jobs Plus program. This doesn't mean these clients won't get a benefit. this represents the dollars over and above what that the food stamp benefit and the TANF benefit provides in terms of wage subsidies to providers. Over and above those two, we have to put a little additional money into that program, and that's what's represented here by this $2.6 million. Another sort of general factor here you need to think about is we have planned most of these budget cuts options for effective date of April 2002. So what you're seeing here is about 15-month savings out of this current 24-month biennium for most of these program cuts. Not in all cases, but most cases. That means that the roll-up for these cuts into 03-05 will very likely be larger than this, what you see on this page for 01-03. So that's the Jobs Plus program. That will affect a number of clients, but those clients will still be eligible to receive a TANF grant or food stamps, but they will no longer participate in the Jobs Plus program.
Doug, do you have the number of clients that this will affect?
I thought I had it on here. We'll get it for you. I can't remember exactly how much it is. I thought I had put it on here. Page four, again, these aren't in priority order within this increment. This is a change in the daycare program, our employment-related daycare, which provides financial assistance or daycare assistance to low-income Oregonians. It's a very important tool in our self-sufficiency efforts and activities to keep people off cash assistance and get them into employment. We're proposing to increase the copay from $25 to $50 here on a monthly basis. That saves about a little over $2 million. In many of these reductions, we've tried to determine what happens to our other programs. This is a good example. In this particular reduction, we expect about 140 families to go off the ERDC program as a result of that, and a few of those folks, in this case, we're assuming 28 of these families would return to the TANF cash assistance grant program as a result of that, and that's been figured into these numbers. So that's that interaction between our programs of what's happening. Page five is a program in Klamath Falls. This is the Klamath Adolescent Program. It serves young adolescent girls age 13 to 17. It only is down in that part of the state, in the south central part of the state, Klamath Falls. It's sort of an isolated program. This was cut in the governor's budget, and the legislature restored it. The next page, six, the Father Taffy Foundation. This is a similar program in terms of it serves an area, in this case around Salem. It had been cut out of the governor's budget and added back. It's a relatively small program, but it serves pregnant and parenting teenage women with services in the Salem area and the surrounding areas to there. There is no other state funding for this program. The next item, again a relatively small amount, is House Bill 3330, which is the regulation of outdoor youth programs. This bill, I think, is a result of what happened over in Central Oregon probably 2 years ago, I'm guessing, whatever time period. And what this funding was to hire a staff person to put together the rules and, implement that bill and regulate those types of providers, and we would not be able to do that if this cut was made. The next item is another one of those sort of fund shifts. We have excess Title 20 funds. This is a federal funding source. The Social Services Block Grant or the Title 20 funds. We have money that we did not spend all of the amount we thought we were in 9901. We're carrying that money forward. In this case, it's almost $4 million, and we can free up general funds someplace in our budget and use this instead. What we're actually proposing here in the accounting parlay of things is to push it forward as tobacco tax revenue and make sure that that way we can spend tobacco tax revenue and free up general fund in the health plan. The next item is another one of those things that were added by the legislature, was not included in the governor's budget. In this case, it's the independent living centers. At the end of session, there was $1.3 million added into the budget. This is over and above the federal funds that are in our budget for these programs across the state. This was an enhancement to those programs. The next item is the juvenile diabetes database. Senate Bill 769, I believe it was authored primarily by Senator Hannan, I believe. This was a new program. It would have established a database and data collection and training and education efforts around, specifically around diabetes of juveniles. And we would have been implementing this program, but we have delayed the implementation around it for these discussions. We already have money, federal funds, in our budget for other diabetes in the old health division, and this was an add-on to those programs specifically directed to juveniles. Another similar item is on page 8.
Does Representative Winters have a question?
Doug, since there's funding within the health division for diabetes in general, is it the plan that they would then assume this responsibility as well?
Madam Chair, Representative Winters, my guess is not, because the funding is generally federal grant funding that we presently have, and we'd have to make sure that we'd be able to use it. All those funds are allocated for the general diabetes program right now, so I doubt that it would be picked up if this money went away.
Is there any indication that the federal government is going to be just as concerned about juvenile diabetes as we are?
Madam Chair, Representative Winters, they could, and will, as always, we search for federal grants and bring them forward to you in terms of for us to apply, and we'd continue to look for those funding sources. The next item on page 8 is related to Senate Bill 243. I believe this was Senator Courtney's bill originally, the primary sponsor, dealing with children's emergency medical services. We have an established emergency services program at the health division, but this was funding added specifically around children's issues and how they relate to this system. Again, we delayed the implementation given the budget shortfall, and coming back to you to see how you want to, whether you want to continue on the development of that program or not. This was added by the legislature and was not included in the governor's original budget.
Mr. Cindy Fink.
Concerning this particular program, Doug, is there any possibility of rolling this into the trauma system for adults also? This was specific for the state of Oregon because we've had several pediatric deaths that could have been avoided with a better trauma system for children. So we're looking at something that could directly lead to somebody's death, a child's death, in the next couple of years. This is an important program. Not to say that the other ones aren't also, but this is something this was sort of an emergency measure because of the several deaths we had on the coast that could have been avoided with a better trauma system.
Madam Chair and Representative Bates, in talking with Senator Courtney and also some doctors who were central to the adult trauma system, is that their belief was that the kids' needs were different enough that the adult trauma system wouldn't accommodate them unless we made specific changes to them. I mean, we can examine that, but I think that the trauma system in Oregon right now is in a state where it isn't, let's say, overly endowed with resources as well. So, I mean, that'd be something we'd have to explore with them.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Moving on page 9, this was another item added late in the session by the legislature, a specific program. This is the DARTS program, the Daily Activity Residential Treatment Service for Kids and Adolescents Mental Health. These programs, and they're scattered throughout the state, are generally added by specific beds by the legislature and has been for a number of times. The rates vary significantly. This is what was added down in Southern Oregon in the Medford-Ashland area this session. And we again have delayed implementation of that given the budget shortfall that we're facing to see what direction we should take. Many of our parts of the state do not have access to DARTS programs. Other areas have significantly more than some other areas of state in terms of the capacity. Page 10,